Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Spooky campus community radio from your favorite campus community radio station up here on Burnaby Mountain, broadcasting from the unceded ancestral territory of the Hulkamelum and Squamish speaking peoples. My name is Jesse. Today I'm Dr. Jones, Indiana. It is Halloween. Happy Halloween! Woo! Hope you have some sort of fun, spooky plan for the day, whether that's hanging out at home, delivering candy to all the cute costumed little ones, or going out to do some trick-or-treating of your own, or maybe you've got a party to attend. Maybe that party's tomorrow night or over the weekend. There's a big ongoing debate about whether this weekend or last weekend is the true Halloweekend. My Halloween party days, I think, for now are behind me. Maybe they will return in some future iteration of Jesse. Today, I did dress up in costume, as I mentioned, Indiana Jones. My leather coat, though, is black instead of the appropriate brown, and it's not quite a bomber jacket. I had to make do with what I had. But my hat is an officially licensed Indiana Jones hat, so I got that part right as well. Also, did not bring any, like, a whip or any weapons to campus. Seemed like that was probably not a smart thing. Anyway, hope you're doing well. And on top of it being Halloween today, and a very spooky week overall, it's also a very exciting and fun week here at CJSF because it is our fun drive. That's right. It is the annual tradition where we ask you, dear listener, to help contribute to support your very favorite local radio station, CJSF, with a financial donation. This year, we are aiming to raise $10,000 for the station to help with all sorts of projects. And so far, the number I see is $2,080. So we got a ways to go. Looking for any amount of donation. We like to say that $35 is a good place to start, but if you want to or are able to donate more, you know, $50, $90.10 to match our frequency at 90.1, $200, whatever you're able to donate, we would really appreciate it. We are funded largely by student fees here at the station, and enrollment at the university has been pretty flat for the last 15 years or so, so our budget has not gone up at all, despite inflation and all of those things. So one of the ways we're trying to accommodate for that and plan around that is by doing this annual fundraiser. We also have all sorts of big expenses that we have to pay, but what really matters is that we're here for you every week, every day, 24/7, always on the air, and we provide content, a service that you enjoy, if you're listening, I hope, and it would really mean a lot to us if you could make a donation by going to cjsffundrive.ca and donating there, or you can text the word donate to 778-782-CJSF, that's 778-782-2573, and then you'll get a response with the instructions on how to make a donation of $35 or more to support Campus Community Radio, be radio's best friend by making a donation. Thank you. We are going to do a whole bunch of stuff this hour on Speak Up. I have, well, two pieces produced for the Local Journalism Initiative, one by Danny and one by myself. So we will hear those and some other stuff, some other reasons why you should support Fundrive, and, of course, a little bit of music. And we are, as always, here on the Thursday Speak Up, when I'm hosting anyway, going to start with a little bit of local music. some VanCon for you, industry insider terminology, Vancouver content, of course. This is from the band Wrong, spelt R-O-N-G. They spelt it wrong. And it's from it's an original Halloween song from their Halloween EP. This one is called Monster Party.
Dracula's maid.
Monster Party by Wrong from Halloween EP. Happy Halloween. Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Here at the station, we do something, well, we do a lot of things differently than other radio stations and other media outlets. We like to provide a platform for voices that are not heard on other outlets, and that goes in terms of you know, the music we play. We like to play music that's not hits, that's maybe unheard on other local, well, on other radio stations. We have a big focus on local and independent music, like artists like Wrong, who you just heard. That also carries over into the kinds of stories we cover. You know, we're looking for stories that aren't being covered by bigger news outlets or being covered in different ways. And it also carries over into who we put on the radio, and that is anyone. If you're interested in radio, if you're interested in having your voice be heard, CGSF is a place where you can do that, where anyone can come and do that, no experience necessary. We provide all the equipment and all the training, and we do that for you or anyone who wants to come participate at no cost. There's no fee involved in participating in CJSF for people who want to participate. And that's great, obviously. It's part of our mission and our mandate is to help people gain access to these things that otherwise, you know, you can't walk into a commercial radio station, the local rock radio station, and say, hey, I want to do a show. They don't work that way. They just have, three or four different shows that they produce throughout the day, and those people are hired, and they have schooling and education and years of experience. And the only way to get in is to go and follow that path as a career, which, you know, if you're really into it, it is great, but you might not know that. You might not want to sink all of your resources into that. And the station here, CJSF, is a good place to find out, hey, do I want to do this? A good place to develop those skills. I myself, I went to SFU from 2005 to 2011 and got my bachelor's degree in archaeology, which does explain my Indiana Jones costume for the day, despite being told very early on that Indiana Jones was not an appropriate role model for an aspiring archaeologist. I did that while I was here, but I also, you know, I've always been into music. I've always been into talking to people, to doing some sort of writing or journalism or some other sort of creative creation. Gosh. And I got involved at the radio station, and I started as a volunteer here at CJSF. And really, really loved the opportunity that was given to me to just come in and sort through all the music that had been sent to the station, discover a bunch of new stuff, and find my voice live on the air. And I tried it out for 3 years, three or four years, started my own show with my co-host Jamie, the Vancouver Mixtape, Sundays at 8 p.m., and then I went to school to actually pursue this as a career. And now I work here for the radio station. And that whole thing would never have happened. I mean, obviously I wouldn't work for this radio station if the radio station didn't exist. But I wouldn't even have had the opportunity to discover that I love doing this and that this is maybe my calling, that this is the thing that I want to do, and the way that I navigate the world is by broadcasting and by engaging with you out there and presenting stuff for you and for myself. So it's really powerful what the radio station provides, and your donation during this year's fund drive can help provide that for lots more people, can help allow us to continue to do that and to even expand what we do to a broader range of people, to be able to do more programming, to be able to provide more training and more support and better shepherd people through the process of becoming radio hosts or other participants in the radio. So if you value what you're hearing, if what I'm saying about supporting people, I was going to say young, independent, creative people, but we're not all young. We don't all start young, but maybe young in the process of coming to radio. Or if you want to support people who have been doing this for decades. Either way, you can go to cjsffunddrive.ca and make a donation. Donate $35 or $50 or any amount to CJSF's fund drive. Or you can give me a call, 778-782-2573. I'll pick up the phone and we can talk about your donation. Or you can just send a text to that same number, 778-782-2573. Send the word donate to 778-782-2573. You'll get a link back to donate to CJSF's fund drive. Any amount is greatly, greatly appreciated. I mentioned that one of the things that we do here at the station is provide a platform for underrepresented voices and tell stories that you're not going to hear other places. The station recently received a government grant for the Local Journalism Initiative. And, you know, that means that this program is paid for through a grant, but kind of underlines the fact that we needed this grant to be able to pay for journalism, because journalism is very, you know, good journalism is very resource intensive. It takes research and fact checking and actually doing the interviews, and it takes editing or all of and compiling all of that into a single piece, and it takes time, it takes money, and the station, we would love to be able to do even more of that beyond the scope of what we're able to do with our 1.5 full-time journalists. And again, you can support that by making a donation at cjsffunddrive.ca. Danny is, well, one of those 1.5 full-time journalists here at the station, and he put together this piece, which is an interview with Burnaby City Councillor Alison Gu on the community investment model for alternative energy, which, you know, not in and of itself necessarily a spooky story, but hey, if you're a internal combustion engine automaker, maybe it is spooky. Anyway, this is Danny, cjsffunddrive.ca.
Hi, this is Danny, your community radio journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And on October 25th, 2024, we were able to sit down with Burnaby Councillor Alison Gu in studio and discuss with her a motion that she had passed back in February for the city to look into the feasibility of a community investment model for the Burnaby District Energy Utility Project. During the interview, Burnaby Councillor Alison Gu goes over the ways in which this community funding model would provide more sustainable and climate-conscious investment opportunities for members of the community. Additionally, she highlights her hopes for the ways in which this project can spark change throughout the rest of Canada if this community funding model for the Burnaby District Energy Utility is able to go through. Please take a listen for all that she had to say. Hi everyone, this is Danny, your community radio journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, and today I'm joined here with Burnaby City Councillor Alison Gu, and we're here to talk about the possibility of introducing a community funding model for alternative energy systems within the city of Burnaby. The first thing I want to ask is, how are you doing today?
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Danny. I'm doing well, thanks.
Awesome, and I guess where I want to start with this is if you could just give a brief background on the motion that was passed back in February regarding exploring the feasibility of community financing for the Burnaby District Energy Utility.
Yeah, for sure. So just to give some folks just a base understanding of what the District Energy Utility is, the City of Burnaby is proposing to start up essentially a municipally owned utility company. And the purposes of this would be to establish district energy system throughout the city. District energy system is essentially a network of insulated pipes that transport hot water. And we use waste heat to be able to heat up that water. And so you'd be able to heat your building, get, you know, your hot water from your showers, your laundry, all through using this waste heat. And you wouldn't be burning gas, you wouldn't be burning fossil fuels, you wouldn't even need to use electricity to do that heating. And there's the potential for doing cooling too. So in the summers, having air conditioning without using electricity, you have a flat rate you pay for your energy bill every month. It's predictable. It's not tied to whether there's a cold snap or really, you know, heat wave. And obviously that project is going to cost a couple hundred million dollars. And so the idea behind the motion was it's an opportunity for people to see themselves in as part of climate solutions and to be able to have a real stake in investing in, physically investing in these solutions that will bring low carbon energy to people and have the potential really to build in a foundation of, you know, energy democracy, transparency, real empowerment, and even frameworks of energy justice.
Wow, thank you very much for that response. I think that gives a really good picture for, I guess, what the motion was trying to accomplish. Have there been any developments on this since February?
Yeah, so actually just yesterday I went and met with a bunch of researchers who have been looking into how energy cooperatives around the country have worked and whether they've been successful and how the successful ones have moved forward. Interestingly enough, it's the city of Nelson has this something called a solar community garden. And the model that they had was they put up the land and they said to the community, if you're a Nelson resident, you can purchase a solar panel and all of the energy revenue that is generated from that solar panel becomes yours. And so you've got this garden of solar panels, all of them funded individually through community members. And, you know, people write them in their wills, like solar panel number 34, passing down through the generations.
Right.
And so the city takes on the operations and maintenance. But it's kind of these cooperative models, these community development models that have been quite rare here. But in places like Denmark, Copenhagen, I was just there recently. Copenhagen has a municipal utility that does offshore wind and district energy. And a huge part of it is that it's cooperatively owned by residents of Copenhagen.
See, that's so interesting. I feel like you don't see a lot of systems working like that here. So I think that was a big reason as to why I wanted to reach out for this interview specifically. Just because I think, yeah, the idea of not only people becoming more informed and aware of these finance models, but also becoming like having a specific stake in it, you know, mm-hmm. benefiting from it, not just due to the fact that it's climate conscious, but also financially as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that you mentioned earlier is that how, you know, this model would offer a secure and ethical way of financial investment for the public.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that because right now you feel that there currently aren't very many options for people?
Yeah, there's not that many options. You know, if you were to invest with Vancity, there's a few options that are kind of like these global, ethical, environmental, sustainable portfolios, which, you know, it's hard to actually parse out what they define as ethical or environmentally conscious or sustainable. There's no real guidelines around what you need to do in order to be defined as such. There's funds like the Housing Accelerator Fund that Vancity does, where you invest money, you're guaranteed, you know, I think a 3.8% return or something like that, and the money goes towards building non-market housing, which is great. Like, that's really great. There isn't the same equivalent for local climate financing. So we've got, you know, people who care about affordable housing, they want to see local solutions tangibly actually implemented. There's no same parallel for climate. So even when we think about like carbon credits and carbon offsets, you know, if you take a plane and it's 300 kilograms of carbon, okay, I'm going to offset that. We don't know where that money goes. We can't see what benefit that actually brings. And that lack of transparency, I think, makes people feel less removed, more removed from the solutions and less implicated in the problems too, right? if you're not part of the solutions, you don't see yourselves necessarily as part of the problem either. There is no ethical right. consumption under capitalism.
Yeah.
But then there's no opportunities for you to be ethical, to be, doing the right thing, and even if you want to. So right. I think this is really about, like, you can see your direct benefit in terms of carbon offsets. You can see directly that it's happening in your local community. And you have the ability to get empowered, right? Like, I think it's also, you know, when people invest money, they're like, well, I guess I should know what I'm putting my money into. So yeah. I guess I should research what a district energy system is and whether this makes sense as a financial investment, right? And so there's all of these opportunities for empowerment. And in there was this I think Nordic country, I think in Sweden, they're in an island. They're a municipality, but they're an island, and they went 100% renewable energy back in like 2020. And the way they said that they did that was they counteracted the NIMBYism. You know, you can build it, but not right here.
Not in my backyard.
Not in my backyard.
Yeah.
They counteracted that by saying to the people who had the projects in their backyard, hey, do you want to invest in this? Hey, do you want to make some money off this? And then all of a sudden, these projects that they were having so much trouble getting through started happening, and they got to 100% renewable energy.
That point that you made about sort of like the tangibility when it comes to housing initiatives versus energy initiatives that are climate conscious, do you think that just has to do with the fact that housing is a much more physically tangible thing versus, you know, climate change and climate solutions, which feel so, I guess, abstract to a lot of people?
Yeah, that's totally fair. I think that's part of it. I think what might be a bigger part of it is just the financialization and the how much money you actually need to be a player in the energy world. Like, mm-hmm. yes, you need a lot of money to be a player in the housing world. But because there's federal government support, there's provincial government support, municipal government support, as a nonprofit, there are a number of nonprofits that do really good work of building out affordable housing, maintaining and operating affordable housing. You know, the YWCA, Catalyst, More Than a Roof Society, all of these different nonprofits, you know, there's a lot. And I don't say that in that, we haven't hit the percentage of nonprofit housing that we need to in order to actually start to bring rents down. We need a lot more of that. But I think with the energy space, I don't know of any energy cooperatives in BC, right? There's two energy players really in BC. It's Fortis Gas, and there's BC Hydro.
Yeah.
And part of that is because of how strictly regulated these energy utilities are by the BC Utilities Commission. And part of it is the amount of risk capital financing that's involved. You have to be a certain level of a player to make a real dent. And that's not to discount. There's, you know, smaller players, like the City of New West actually has its own energy utility company that was established many decades ago. And so they continue to operate like an energy utility. There haven't been any modern utility energy companies coming up, and especially not so that are structured in a more of a community involvement way.
And to switch the conversation a little bit here, there's a part of the motion that mentions, you know, the different communities and governments that can benefit from this project, one of which being local First Nations governments and communities. Are you able to expand specifically on the ways in which an investment model such as this would work towards benefiting these communities, First Nations communities specifically, mm-hmm. in this case?
Yeah, I think a really important part of reconciliation is obviously economic sovereignty, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Giving First Nations the actual tools, so resources, to be able to make decisions on behalf of their communities. You can't make a good decision if you are stuck in between a rock and a hard place. And a lot of the times in our kind of resource industrial context, First Nations are faced with the really challenging decisions of, do they protect their communities from poverty, from a lot of the plight of colonialism?
Yeah.
Or do they do that through supporting fossil fuel projects in their communities, or do they go with kind of what they have always had as their values of environmental stewardship and loving the land, and try to oppose those projects and spend a lot of money in court, often fight the project, spend a lot of time, and often they haven't been successful. So when we are giving local, First Nations,